Hey everyone, this is going to be the most important podcast that I have ever released to date. It's been, 7 years now of Physionic, and the podcast has been running for a number of years, maybe 4 years, 5 years, something like that. This is the most important podcast. The reason being is that I've taken a long time to write down notes, create a ton of graphics for you that if you're watching the podcast, to explain fat loss. I got an email just a little while ago from someone that really wanted to know from kind of point A to point B, what happens in terms of fat loss. So that's what I'm going to be doing. And I'm going to be explaining the hormonal aspects. So we're going to be discussing Dr. Fung. We're going to be discussing Dr. Berg. We're going to be discussing keto. We're going to be discussing high carb diets. So I would really just so strongly encourage that you do not skip to the conclusions and takeaways, because you will miss basically everything. I'm going to be having a conclusions and takeaways as always, but it's going to be like two lines and this podcast is going to be really long. And also, this is not going to be concise. This is going to be a lot of information. And with all of those stipulations out of the way, I'm really, truly begging you, do not skip this podcast, because I'm going to be telling you so much information. And if you're already kind of looking at me or thinking in your head, well, who is this guy? Because you're not familiar with Physionic. My name is Nicholas Verhoeven. I'm a doctoral candidate in molecular medicine. And related to this particular podcast, not only my doctorate degree that I'm pursuing, but I also worked in a metabolism laboratory. So I do have some credentials to actually back up what I'm saying. And I've been published in a metabolism journal, the metabolism journal, actually. And I hope that I can convince you of really what's happening. How do we lose fat? How do hormones play into these things? How do calories play into this? How does metabolism play into this? Well, all of that will be covered here. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump in. And I'm going to be consulting my many, many notes that I've written down so I can keep on track without going too far off track as I go throughout. Okay, so let's start out by just understanding things really basically, that the body is constantly in flux, meaning that you have molecules that are going in and you have molecules that are going out. And yes, this is kind of a really dumbed down version or a distilled version of what I'm saying is the law of conservation of mass. You have to have molecules that go in and you have molecules that then end up leaving. And how does that actually manifest itself? Well, really basically is in our food content. Those are the molecules that go in. So our food content is made up of chemicals. As much as if you get this like fear that comes off in you or this resentment that comes off in you by the idea that food is chemicals, then I would encourage that you take an organic chemistry course or just look up organic chemistry a little bit, and you'll understand that our food and our entire body is completely made up of chemicals. It is chemistry. So speaking to that, if you consume, let's say, a piece of meat, a steak, or really anything, you're going to have a certain amount of protein in there, but you're also, which is amino acid chemicals, amino acid molecules. So, and not only that, you also have fat molecules. So saturated fats, unsaturated fats of varying lengths, varying degrees of saturation. But the point is that you have fat molecules, and that's found in your food. Then on top of that, you also have sugar molecules or carbohydrate molecules, which we'll be discussing as glucose molecules, because those are the most common and those are the most prevalent in our body and what our body ends up actually using. So you've got your breads that consume carbohydrates, pastas, rice, all that stuff contains carbohydrates in the form of glucose. So you consume that, and that goes into your digestive tract and your intestinal system, and then it gets broken up. So the foods, the actual structure of the food gets broken up, and all those molecules get freed from that food and end up in your bloodstream. And then once it ends up in your bloodstream, I'm not going to show you any images of that because it's a lot of complex metabolism. That's really not important for us to understand how all of this works. But the point is that all these molecules end up in your bloodstream, and then they get pushed into all the cells of your body, every single cell of your body. And then those cells do something with those molecules, and they produce two different things. And again, not something that I'm going to go super into depth with for this, because I have so much other content I need to cover. But the end product of that, so from consumption to digestion, absorption into our cells to be metabolized, is heat and CO2 or carbon dioxide. So we breathe out a lot of the molecules that we end up, or really all, most of the molecules that we end up consuming. And we also produce heat, which is in the form of adenosine triphosphate, which is a cellular energy molecule, ATP. And when we use that, when our cells use that energy, they liberate heat. And that's where we get this measurement of heat. So this isn't a full encompassing education, but the point is that you have molecules that come in and you have molecules that come out. They just get converted to a different type of molecule. That's it. That's what I want you to know. Just kind of starting out. Okay, so now looking into the bloodstream itself. In the bloodstream, you have our fat molecules that we've just consumed, as well as our carbohydrate molecules that we've consumed. And those can end up in the fat cells. So the fat molecules will end up in the fat cells, for example, and blood sugar or blood glucose, however you want to define it, those are all the same, can end up in your liver, can end up in your muscle cells. And the fat molecules can end up in your muscle cells and the liver as well. And this is certainly not all-encompassing because there's so many different tissues that end up consuming or taking up all of this stuff to end up metabolizing it. But the point is that these molecules go from the bloodstream into the tissues. Now, I'm going to be focusing in specifically on fat cells or fat loss, fat gain and fat loss, because that's what seems to be of most importance to most people. That's what I get asked about the most. So if we just focus in on fat cells, which are independent of fat molecules, I've said this many times before, but it bears repeating because I don't want this to get confused, that your fat cells contain billions of fat molecules. So the intake of fat molecules and the release of fat molecules is a constant process for these fat cells. And that's why at the beginning I said that our body is constantly in flux, meaning that there's not quite an equilibrium, but there is a constant intake and efflux or release of fat molecules from these fat cells, which leads us to maintain the amount of fat that we have on our body. So for fat loss on a really basic scale, although highly applicable, is that we've got our fat cells and the amount that's released from the fat cells is greater than the amount that's taken in by the fat cells. So the amount of fat tends to increase in terms of its release from the fat cells as opposed to the intake. And that ultimately leads the fat cell to shrink, and therefore we see fat loss on our body when we look in the mirror, when we step on a scale or whatever it might be. Fat gain, as you can likely imagine, is the exact opposite, right? You have more fat molecules being taken up by the fat cells and less is being removed from the fat cells. So this leads to an engorging of the fat cells. Now, let's start to talk about hormones. Let's start to sprinkle in hormones here. This is where Dr. Fung, Dr. Ekberg, Dr. Berg, all of these different doctors have mentioned insulin. They've mentioned various hormones, but they specifically focus in on insulin. They've mentioned cortisol as well, but insulin is the big one that they always harp on. So let's discuss it. So insulin, in this process of fat loss and fat gain, has a dual effect. Actually, has many effects across the body, but specifically in this situation, insulin blocks the release of fat molecules from the fat cells. So this would then trap these fat molecules in the fat cells, or at least lessen their ability to be released. The other effect that it has is it promotes the uptake of fat, so fat molecules into the fat cells. So clearly this shifts things towards, in a vacuum, if you were just to look at this phenomenon, just with these fat cells, with this blood vessel, with these fat molecules, and then add insulin, this is what you would find. You would find this, that the insulin would promote fat gain overall. But no one ever asks, and this is where things are going to start getting more intriguing. Hopefully I can offer some actual answers to this, because it's something that's bugged me for such a long time, that nobody ever asks what actually triggers the insulin beyond the obvious answer of blood sugar. And what controls this insulin? And what controls insulin is, at least in a great part, maybe not completely, but a great part, is based on metabolism. And I'll explain exactly how as we go forward. So metabolism not only controls insulin, but it controls other hormones, controls glucagon, it controls GLP, glucagon-like peptide, it controls ghrelin, it controls peptide YY, neuropeptide Y, AGRP, leptin. It controls all of these different hormones to some degree, some to more than others. Like ghrelin, for example, is one that might get released by stretch receptors. The same would be true for leptin, which is a sensor for fat molecules, as well as the amount of fat that we have in our body, as well as metabolism. So, but overall, metabolism definitely has its hand in the cookie jar and has an effect on these hormones in general. So as a prime example of that, let me explain how one example of how metabolism could affect hormones. So this is a really prime example. This is something a lot of people discuss, but they don't really discuss how it happens. And I'm not going to go into super detail here either, but you have a pancreas in your body. It's made up of pancreatic cells, pancreas cells, specifically the beta type pancreas cells. Then you have a rise in blood sugar. The blood sugar will enter the pancreatic cells, will increase the amount of cellular energy that's available, specifically ATP. This will lead to a bunch of downstream effects that I have not shown here, but ultimately you get the release of insulin. So blood sugar increases in blood sugar, release insulin from these pancreatic cells. And the insulin is then in the bloodstream. It can affect all these different other organ systems. But the point is that ATP levels are the things that end up increasing, as well as a few other factors, and lead to this release of insulin. So here we've got an example of metabolism as defined by the molecules like glucose, fat, as well as ATP, so the actual cellular energy itself. Okay, so what is metabolism in terms of the entirety of your body, however? Well, every single cell in your body needs X amount of energy. It must have that amount of energy, otherwise it will not function, because you have billions and trillions of processes within your cells that require ATP. They require energy. They require cellular energy. So they have to constantly be taking up blood sugar, and they have to constantly be taking up fats to transform those molecules to eventually kind of take up or create this cellular energy out of the glucose, out of the fat molecules. And in that process, they're transforming the chemical structure of the glucose and of the fat molecules. That's done through glycolysis and beta oxidation and oxidative phosphorylation for anyone who's interested in the actual pathways themselves. But that means that every single one of these cells, and I've got a diagram here of many cells, but this is such a minute scale. Really, we're talking about trillions of cells inside your body. All of those added up with the use of the ATP that they need. Remember, ATP leads to this release of heat when you use the ATP molecules. All of that can be quantified in calories. That's where we get, that's why we use calories. We also use kilojoules or joules. It's a similar process. We're just measuring the amount of heat that's released. And there are other mechanisms to estimate that as well, but I'm just focusing on it in a really simple way, what's called direct calorimetry. So these cells produce X amount of heat, and you can measure that, right? Your temperature should be at 98.4 degrees or whatever it is, and it can fluctuate just a little bit, but your body produces X amount of heat. And that's because where does that heat come from? You have to ask yourself that. And that is coming from your cells, all of your cells. Every single one of your cells is emanating a certain amount of heat. And all of that can be quantified into a particular number. And that number we use as a proxy for metabolism. So whatever that number is, which is also called the total daily energy expenditure, but whatever that number is, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to throw a number out there. But for some people, it's 2,000 calories, the standard amount. For me, it's up around 3,400 to 3,600. It's usually around 3,600 calories. But that's because I'm a man. I'm 6'6". I'm 230 pounds. I weigh a lot. I'm a large human being. So that's why my metabolism is so high. But for a woman, for example, or a smaller individual, it might be 1,800 calories or it might be 1,400 calories. But that number is a measure of all of the metabolic processes that occur within your entire body, all of the cells. So now if we look at this and we take that number as a proxy of our total metabolism, I'm going to create this small bar graph. And where this line is, this dotted line, and I apologize to those of you that are just listening to the podcast, I would really recommend that you pop on over and watch. This dotted line is what your body requires to maintain its weight. So it maintains the flux of these molecules. It maintains the flux of the fat molecules and the blood sugar molecules. That is all represented in here. And it also represents, obviously, the hormonal control, which we'll be returning back to in just a second. So if you consume enough to fulfill that number, and granted, it will shift a little bit because it's hard to say that a biological being is going to be 1,700 calories. This is it. It's always 1,700 calories. But if you take the average of all the numbers day to day, it's going to average out to a particular number. And that's what we're representing here. So if you always consume up to this line, you are in perfect balanced flux, that the molecules you're consuming are then also being converted into energy and also being converted into CO2. And then you end up releasing it at some later point. So that's the efflux and the influx. So when we lose weight, when we want to lose fat specifically, we have to be in a calorie deficit. Bear with me if you don't believe in calorie deficits, just please bear with me. So you have to be in a calorie deficit, or if you're gaining weight, fat specifically, and I'm going to limit it to fat, even though there's muscle gain and all that, but fat gain, you're over consuming above what your cells need. So you have X amount of cells in your body, they need X amount of energy. And if you are consuming consistently above that, that leads to fat gain. So we're going to see what that looks like or why that might occur, especially from a hormonal standpoint. And then you've got your maintenance. Okay, so let's look at our maintenance again. This is very similar to what I just showed you earlier, but you have for your maintenance, this is the required amount that you need to maintain your body. So the flux inwards, and I'm just using fat cells as one example, although this applies to a lot of different organ systems or a lot of different tissues. You've got one or just X amount of fat molecules that are going into the fat cells, and because this requires a demand for fat, it requires a demand for energy in general, but it can come from fat or it can come from blood sugar, or it can come from glucose in general. But normally we attribute it to fat because we have so much more fat than we do sugar, blood sugar, glycogen. So you have some fat that goes into these fat cells, and you have some fat that's released from these fat cells because there is a call from metabolism through hormones that tells these fat cells that they need to release X amount because the other cells of the body need to be taking up these fat molecules to produce energy, to fulfill this function, this total daily energy expenditure, this maintenance level. So now let's look at what happens with fat loss. And I'm going to be describing a few different hormones, specifically really popular ones. Okay, so with fat loss, again, we're consistently consuming under what our body has established what it needs, or what we've established through kilocalories, kilojoules, joules, however you want it. Even if we were just to get rid of those, this is physics that we're applying biology to physics. Okay, so that's what I'm trying to reconcile here. So with fat loss, we're consistently under-consuming what we have to be consuming. Remember, this is the total amount that we should be consuming to maintain our weight, or the amount of molecules that make up our body. And here, we're now at a deficit. So the amount of molecules that we're consuming is up to this point, but it falls shy of what the total amount that we need. So if we look in a microscopic level, looking at fat tissue, the fat molecules that are going into the fat cells are less than what's being effluxed or released from the fat cells. And that's because this amount has to be made up for somehow, because the rest of the body needs the energy. This is non-negotiable. This line is non-negotiable. It's not like your metabolism can just be like, well, you know what? Let's just shut off for a while. It doesn't work that way. It has to stick to this point. And yes, there's going to be variability down the road, but I'm looking at things from, let's say, within a few weeks, for example. But of course, there's going to be adaptations and whatnot. And I've covered that in other content as well. But overall, you're not going to see a massive drop in like a day or a couple days or anything like that. So let's just say that this is, and it is non-negotiable, that this has to be fulfilled. So why does that occur? Well, it happens because of hormones. So cheers to Dr. Fung, and cheers to all these different people that have mentioned hormones as the primary driver of fat loss and fat gain, blah, blah, blah. So what are some of these hormones? Well, one of the most popular ones that people always discuss is insulin. Okay, fair enough. Insulin drops, and therefore you have more of this fat release because, as we mentioned before, as I specifically pointed out, insulin inhibits this process. Another hormone that increases is neuropeptide Y. Neuropeptide Y increases hunger. So because you're in a deficit, eventually this neuropeptide Y is going to get stronger and stronger and stronger, and you're going to get hungrier and hungrier. Another one, the opposite of neuropeptide Y, is sort of the opposite. It comes from a different area, called peptide YY. This one decreases because this one actually increases fullness. It reduces hunger. So naturally, this is going to reduce because your body's starting to fight back because you're getting away from the set point. So it fights back by releasing all these hormones. But the driver for the release of those hormones is metabolism. It is the lack of consumption. That is the driver. Okay, I'm getting passionate because I really need you to understand this because this is where people stop. This is where all the quote unquote, let me cut this off. This is where all the quote unquote experts keep just stopping. They're just hormones, done. Insulin, drop insulin. I'm going to explain that. I'm going to explain the drop in insulin and how we can reconcile metabolism with all that stuff. Because really, we need to take that extra step so we can reconcile the calories in, calories out equation, the physics of the matter, the law of conservation of mass, and law of thermodynamics, and what we're seeing with these hormones. Okay, so leptin decreases because, again, you're in a calorie deficit, you're losing more fat molecules. So you're not in this balanced flux. You are losing more of these fat molecules. And this leads to a decrease in the release of leptin. Okay, but what about fat gain? Well, it's the exact opposite. Metabolism is satisfied. You're hitting this threshold and you're even going over. And we have fewer hormones that actually protect against fat gain. We have more hormones that protect against fat loss. If that's evolution, whatever you want to say, I'm not even going to speculate on that because it just doesn't matter, at least not for this story. So with fat gain, you see an increase in insulin, and this is consistent across all the literature, just absolutely all the literature. You consume more food in general, regardless of the makeup, and you compare that to another amount of food that's less, insulin is going to be increased when you consume more food, just simple as that. And I don't think anybody disputes that. Neuropeptide Y is going to decrease because you're eating more, so your fullness increases. So the drive to eat should be decreased, and that's what happens. Peptide YY is increased because that is what's driving this fullness. So it's kind of an antithesis to neuropeptide Y. And because you've got more of these fat molecules entering the fat cells than are being released, leptin is increased. So all of this is dictated by metabolism. Okay, so just as a reminder again, this is where a lot of keto enthusiasts, this is where a lot of low-carb people, and this is where I'm going to start addressing the difference between the two major diets, the kind of antithetic diets. So here's where keto people are like, well, yeah, okay, great. This is all fine, right? You get this decrease in insulin with fat loss, sure, but you get even more of a decrease in insulin with keto, and therefore, quote unquote, it is superior for fat loss. Well, that absolutely does not bear out in the literature. If you look at the data, which I have a video on that, where I look at multiple studies, and it's incredibly consistent that keto does not lead to greater fat loss. It leads to equal fat loss when you control for calories. And if you're resistant to that, please, please check out that video because it has many studies linked to it. I show you the actual data. I show you everything. But anyway, I digress. The point is that the idea is that because blood sugar increases cell energy, this releases insulin. So therefore, well, let's eliminate the blood sugar, right? Let's eliminate the carbohydrates and therefore we'll have even less insulin. And that actually pans out. That's true. If you go on a low carb diet, then you're going to have less insulin release. I'm not disputing that for one bit. But now let's look at that. So let's look at the context here. So this is in a maintenance state. Just to be clear here, we're looking at a maintenance state. So one thing that people don't, for some reason, just kind of ignore is that, sure, you're consuming low carbs, but you're also consuming high fat. What is that fat? It's high fat molecules. So now we're looking at the actual molecules themselves to try to determine not just are you consuming overall a certain amount of molecules, but what are those molecules? And in here, we're consuming a lot of fat molecules. So you're going to have a lot more fat molecules that are also going to be input into these fat cells. And your metabolism, sure, is going to switch to more fat-based, which is great, but it still doesn't defeat this overall point that your metabolism needs X amount of energy. So your cells are screaming for X amount of energy, and that X amount of energy gets released into through these fat molecules. So a high-fat diet will lead to more fat being taken up into the fat cells, but you will also be able to supply your cells with fat, which is great. However, and that is permissive through the extremely low insulin. So even lower insulin than you would normally see. So that sounds great. However, and actually I'll discuss this next hormone in just a second. So let's look at a fat loss situation. So here, again, you're still consuming high fat, but this is all made up of, or majority made up of, a high fat diet, but you're not reaching this threshold. So automatically your body has to start, no matter what, has to start losing weight, has to start dropping fat. So even though your fat consumption is still quite high and you're still taking up some fat, you're releasing more fat because all your other cells, your muscle cells, your brain cells, your pancreatic cells, your liver cells, your kidney cells, all of those cells, bone cells, just keep on going, immune cells, all of those cells are screaming for energy. So your fat cells have to, no matter what, release more fat molecules. Now, there is another hormone here that low-carb, high-fat individuals just don't ever discuss. And granted, it's not incredibly popular. It's not nearly as popular as insulin, but it should be, because it's incredibly important to understand why a low-carb, high-fat diet can have such low insulin levels and yet not lead to greater fat loss. And the reason for that, or at least one of the reasons, I'll go ahead and take a step back and say one of the reasons is because there are insulin-independent ways that fat can be stored. If that blew your mind, then check out some of my other content on this particular hormone, which is called acetylation stimulating protein. And this is specifically upregulated when you consume high fat, not low carbs, or not high carbs, my apologies, not high carbs, but high fat. So this will increase the uptake of fat into the fat cells. So while insulin levels, sure, are lower, ASP is higher in a low carb, high fat condition. But let's not stop there. Let's also investigate what a high carb, low fat condition might look like. And here again, we're at maintenance and we have this balance between the two. So we have some fat uptake and we have some fat release. Insulin is certainly higher because we're at maintenance, and ASP is going to be lower just because of the nature of this diet. Now, if we're looking at fat loss, yes, insulin is also lower. It's not as low as it would be with a low-carb diet, but on the other hand, ASP is also not stimulated. So it's two different mechanisms to achieve the same result. And it's based on the amount of overall molecules that are coming into the body, the amount of total amount of food that is being consumed. If that's fat molecules, blood sugar molecules, ultimately the hormones will figure themselves out because the metabolism is dictating these hormones. I really hope I'm getting this across, because this is vitally important for you to understand. And if you understand this, you'll be able to broaden your understanding of how to reconcile the calories and energy intake and et cetera, with hormones specifically. So insulin is lower, but ASP is also lower. And that's what leads to fat loss, because this ultimately still has to be fulfilled. Because although you're still consuming more carbohydrates than you would in this situation with a high fat diet, because low carbs, you aren't fulfilling this overall maintenance calories that you need to achieve. So no matter what, your fat cells are still secreting more fat than they're taking up. So finally, what does this all look like? Well, again, if you just look at all these maintenance, or all these caloric content, or the energy, you have your maintenance here, and in a high carb situation, you're going to have this mostly be carbohydrates. And obviously you're also going to be low fat, because you can't have high fat and high carbohydrate at the same time, because that means that you're essentially eating no protein, and you're going to die. or you're way over consuming calories in general, or your energy intake, and therefore you're going to gain weight in that regard as well. The fat loss, you're going to generally reduce some of your carbohydrates and maintain your fats. And ultimately, this is going to get filled in with fats. Whatever needs to be filled in for the rest of your body. This red square is the needed amount by your entire body screaming, your metabolism, screaming for the hormones to get released in the appropriate amounts to ultimately release fats from the fat cells. And then you've got this switch. Remember, all those hormones then reverse, or most of those hormones end up reversing when you're in this fat gain situation. Again, more carbohydrates are being consumed. Let's clamp the fats being low, but regardless, you're overconsuming, so you're going to gain weight. Now, this low-carb, high-fat situation is the exact opposite. You have low carbohydrates and a high-fat consumption, which is making up the amount of influx that you're taking in, but it's not high enough in this fat loss situation, and therefore you end up still, your cells are still screaming from a metabolic demand that you need more molecules. You need more metabolism-related molecules like fat molecules. And that's why you get this more release from fat. And this is dictated by low insulin. The high carb, low fat is dictated by the low insulin, but low ASP, as this is just a few of the mechanisms. And the low-carb, high-fat is dictated by the extra-low insulin, but the elevated ASP. And on the other hand, maintenance and fat gain, as you can see, you're just increasing your fats a little bit more to reach this threshold or go over this threshold. And this isn't to say that there aren't advantages to certain diets. This is just from a purely fat loss standpoint. And the ketogenic diet or a low-carb, high-fat diet has advantages that I didn't discuss, but they do have advantages like increased satiety because fat molecules tend to be more satiating. They reduce hunger. So if you've had success with that, congratulations. I'm not at all taking that away. I have so much content on keto and low-carb diets, and I've shown that they're highly effective. But the point is that we have to be able to understand this framework of how metabolism dictates our hormonal patterns that then dictate the release of fat molecules from our fat cells, as well as the uptake of fat molecules by our fat cells. And that's where a lot of these gurus and whatnot they just don't discuss that because there's a lot of complexity in that. And I've distilled it certainly quite a bit. And I'm sure if somebody is educated metabolism, is educated endocrinology, and studies gastroenterology, I mean, there's a lot more complexity here. Absolutely. I'm not denying that. But hopefully, I'm really hoping that now you have this basis of understanding that everything hinges on your overall cell need for energy. And that will then affect your hormones, and then that will affect your fat levels, muscles, all, every other tissue. But I specifically focused on fat tissue. And big picture, long term, if this continues, if you continue to underconsume, right, eventually your metabolism starts to decrease. But it's not like your cells need less energy. What typically happens is, one, your hunger increases, it skyrockets, and two, your non-exercise activity thermogenesis decreases. Actually, I should add a third one. A third one is that as you lose body weight, then that means there's less mass that your skeletal muscles have to move, and therefore there's less energy that's required to move the decrease in mass. So at one point you weigh 200, let's say, I'll go kilograms, 100 kilograms. And another situation, you weigh 85 kilograms. It takes less energy to move the 85 kilograms than it does the 100 kilograms. That's just pure physics. but it also applies to this biological context. So yes, metabolism shifts, but the cells themselves, it's not like they need less energy. So you're still going to have a lot of, all of these rules still apply. It's just that things shift. So that's why your caloric intake needs to constantly be adapted. And then there are different tricks and tips that I can go into in other content as well. So I realize I'm sort of repeating myself now, but so I'll end it with the conclusions and takeaways so we can get kind of the last little snippet. Overall, metabolism, which is defined, and this is important, by the amount of each molecule present, that's fat molecules and glucose molecules or carbohydrate molecules, as well as the amount of cellular energy, because cellular energy is the main driver for this. Both of those, glucose and fat molecules and cellular energy in the form of ATP, dictate fat loss and fat gain, as well as other gains like muscle and lean mass, although I didn't cover that, through the regulation of hormones. So glucose increases insulin, or the lack of glucose can decrease the level of insulin, and fat increases ASP, or the lack of fat can decrease ASP. That's it, folks. If you have questions, please post them below, post them in the comment section. I will try to answer them as much as I can, and really try to share this video, because if you found it helpful, and if not, if I screwed up, if I didn't explain things in like well enough, I will redo this video, because it is super important for people to understand, because I just feel like people are so hell-bent on hormones being everything. And while they are critical, they are the messengers between metabolism and fat loss and fat gain, they are not, there's pieces missing that we need to address to be able to reconcile this energy intake issue that people constantly dismiss, which is absolutely true, and this hormonal hypothesis that people throw out there willy-nilly without actually explaining the mechanisms, because if I'm completely honest with you, I don't think that they fully understand the mechanisms. But I digress. Anyway, thank you for listening. Hopefully you didn't get too wrapped up in my passion there, but and hopefully it was helpful. And with that, if you went through the entire podcast, kudos. Freaking awesome. I really thank you. I really appreciate it. And hopefully you learned something. Okay. I will catch you in the next one. See ya.